The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Frankly, I don't think there's anybody that we have brought back more frequently than Howard Gold. Howard is editor-at-large of themoneyshow.com and a columnist for MarketWatch. Previously, he was executive editor of themoneyshow.com. And he was the editor of Barron's Online. I'm sure you're very familiar with Howard Gold, and he is truly one of our favorite, absolutely favorite guests, and we're pleased to have him on with us this morning. Good morning, Howard.
Good morning, Mike. Good to be with you again.
Oh, it's great to have you back. Listen, I might as well start out with the obvious, because I saw a headline this morning said, should investors be worried about North Korea? So I'd like to get your take on on the North Korea contingent, and then let's talk a little bit about Cyprus. Let's get the other side of the pond out of the way. What's your thoughts about the crisis du jour?
Well, you know, I am no expert on North Korea, but the good news is nobody else is either, because we really can't figure out what's going on there. And I notice, I wonder if your listeners in Houston are concerned, because I know Kim Jong-un targeted Austin, Texas as one of his possible targets in attacks on the United States.
And yeah, I figured he was Republican when he did that, because that's a very liberal part of that's the most liberal part of Texas. So I figured that, you know, maybe the Republicans got to him and said, you don't want to point there.
Well, John Stewart was joking that maybe he got his indie film rejected at South by Southwest. So, but anyway, you know, I mean, can we really, as investors, I mean, we know that it's a dangerous situation in the world, that area of Asia. I think in the next 10 years is going to have a lot of issues coming up that we don't think about now. Now we think of the Middle East as Iran, as the hot spots. But, you know, that part of Asia will be emerging as a much more volatile zone in the next 10 years. Now, if I were a national security person, I would be very worried about it, because we have to figure out a way to address it. As an investor, are we really going to have to worry about what some, you know, 28-year-old megalomaniac's going to be doing to plan for our futures? I mean, I just don't see it.
Yeah, I call him Mr. Potato Head. That's kind of what it looks like to me. All right. So we're not going to worry about him for now, because there's not anything we can do about it. But
we
you
can't
wrote
do
an
anything
article.
About it.
Right. You wrote an article entitled Welcome to the New Market, and you started out talking about Cyprus, and then you went to the point where you said politics just don't matter as much anymore, or matter at all. So have we just kind of just gotten so numbed by all this stuff that the fiscal cliff and the debt arguments, which I guess we're not going to have one now, and all the political ramifications that come out of Washington, we're just not paying that much attention to them anymore?
Well, I think it's an interesting contrast, because I think, as I pointed out, from August of 2011, when we had the debt ceiling crisis here in the U.S., until the fiscal cliff negotiations ended on January 1st, politics really was driving the market, along with the Federal Reserve and, you know, whatever was happening in the economy. But, you know, every time we had big drops because of Europe for 2 years in a row, you know, the fiscal cliff at the time, the debt ceiling thing, as the market bottomed out then, we had about a 20% drop in 2011. And since then, things have calmed quite a bit. And I think a couple of factors were Mario Draghi's claim, you know, statement last July that they would do whatever it takes to save the euro and to prevent countries from going under. I think that was one big thing. And I just think the fact is that there's a lot of political exhaustion here in Washington. And, you know, the other hat I wear is I write a political blog called The Independent Agenda, and I've covered the budgetary stuff extensively. And I have a piece out today about, you know, there are actually very quietly negotiations going on between polar opposites Paul Ryan and Patty Murray about trying to come up with a budget proposal. And I think what's happened is that we've gotten away from the brinkmanship, and we've gotten to a more normal dysfunction in Washington, D.C., which none of us like as citizens, but it's probably not going to create damage for us as investors the way the kind of careening from crisis to crisis did over the past couple of years.
Have they worn themselves out? It sounds like they just have flailed. It's like two fighters in the ring. They just kind of have flailed at each other. It's like, the fights that took place at the turn of last century they'd be fighting for, like Johnson. I think he had one that went on for 70 rounds or something like that. These guys have just flailed away at each other. They're just tired.
Well, that scene in Raging Bull where he's going against a Sugar Ray Robinson, there's also this fight that goes on and on and on. I think it's kind of like that. And I think that the more important thing is that the public has just gotten totally exasperated. And I think there's some movement to try to show that they're actually doing something constructive. Now, whether that comes of anything, I don't know. But the main thing is we have had quite a bit of deficit reduction already. I mean, and a lot of the things that have come and gone without a disaster. We had a bad deal resolving the fiscal cliff, which is the only kind of deal they're capable of doing. We had the sequester. Remember, a notorious sequester? The president was warning all kinds of terrible things were going to happen. Well, the sky hasn't fallen, last I noticed. And we have a lot of other things. We're not going to have the debt limit kind of brinkmanship. We have a regular budget process. It's kind of normalized now. So, I mean, that was my main point of the column, which is that a lot of the factors that used to set the markets into a tizzy are now, having some effect, but not dramatic ones anymore.
Now, but you did mention one thing that you think is significant, and that's the German election was slated for late September. Do you still feel like that's going to be a significant event or have impact on us as investors over here in the United States?
Well, it could for a short time. Now, in Germany, their elections go, they start the election in August and they end it near the end of September. I don't know what's wrong with them. They can't have a, 4-year long campaign the way we do. But I think as we start seeing the polls coming out late in the summer and September, which is around the time when the markets usually are fairly weak seasonally, I think we could see some ripple effects, especially if Angela Merkel's party doesn't win. If the Social Democratic Party wins, that's the more liberal party, and she is the more conservative coalition. If they win, and she has to give up power, I think we will see some kind of a little turbulence in the market. But I spoke to an expert in Berlin for that column, and he told me that essentially the party's stand on Europe is pretty much the same.
Okay, and by the way, this is a good time, I think, to mention your blog and your website, because you're different than most writers that we talk to. Is most of the ones we talk to are just pure business, pure economics. But you do have a political bent in some of the research that you do, and so it's called The Independent Agenda, correct?
Right, right. I had a couple of pieces on Cyprus last week. I have something today on the budget. I try to do a variety of things.
So independentagenda.com, and is that your blog?
Yes.
Okay, all right. One of your other articles, see, I'm kind of going out. This is, remember the old show, This Is Your Life? All right, this is what we're playing. This is what I'm playing. This is what I'm playing with you, Howard. I've only got a minute, so we'll do it when I get on the other side. But really, I read you last night. You're my bedtime stories. I read a bunch of them.
I'm glad I put you to sleep, Mike.
Okay. No, actually, you kept me awake. I mean, I'm not looking too good this morning, Howard. But I tell you what, when we come back, I like to cover two things. You had an article where you talked about how the top bond fund managers are making changes, which I thought was very interesting, at some of the changes that they're beginning to make in anticipation of higher interest rates. And then let's talk about jumping back in the stock market right now, because people, I think, are coming, a lot of them are coming late to the party, and I'm very concerned about the risk they're taking. So when we come back, folks, we're talking with Howard Gold, editor-at-large of The Money Show and columnist for Market Watch. We'll be back to you in just a moment. Stay with us.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Welcome back, folks. We have with us today one of our favorite guests, Howard Gold, editor-at-large of TheMoneyShow.com and a columnist for Market Watch. You can follow Howard on the independentagenda.com. That's his new political blog, the independentagenda.com. And if you'd like to speak with him today, if you'd like to ask him a question, give us a call at 877-711-5611. That's 877-711-5611. Both Howard and I would love to hear from you if you've got any questions about politics or about business. You know, most of my guests, you can't ask any questions about politics or the political impact that it would have on your investing. But with Howard, you can. So this is an opportunity for you to ask questions that you may not normally get to ask. So give us a call at 877-711-5611. Howard, just before the break, I was talking to you about two of your articles that I really, really liked. And one of them was entitled Top Bond Fund Managers Batten Down the Hatches. And, of course, there's a tremendous amount of concern within the industry. You're starting to see an awful lot of press about, you know, what happens to bonds when interest rates rise. And there's, in fact, I noticed that there was an argument yesterday between two Fed governors, Charles Evans of the Chicago Fed and Jeffrey Lacker of the Richmond Fed. And I shouldn't say argument. Let's just say it was a nice disagreement at a
scholarly debate.
yes, it was. Yeah, about, you know, about which direction interest rates should go, and you know, there's questions about, you know, what metrics the Fed really should be using, or is inflation a factor? All these things are coming out. But what you're saying is, I guess some of the folks in the industry that run big money are beginning to make some changes. What are your thoughts on where interest rates are going and what's going on out there and the risk that the general public has investing in bonds?
Well, I mean, I think you should invest in bonds. I just think you need to be careful because, remember, the longer the term of the bonds you own, with the bond funds or your own or directly, the bigger interest risk you have to higher interest rates. It's what they call duration. And you have to be very careful about that. So what I'm finding is that these bond fund managers, they've been doing this for a while, have shortened up on maturity and duration so that the average holding is maybe, you know, the average maturity on some of these funds that used to be like 10 years, 11 years, is now 5 to 7 years. And they realize that they've given up a little return, but at this point we have 0% interest rates. I mean, the 10-year Treasury went down to 1.38% last July. I mean, that is lower than we've ever seen it. We have the lowest bond yields. I think the UK has the lowest bond yields since the Bank of England started in 1695, and I think the Netherlands have the lowest bond yields in 500 years. This is extraordinary. So, I mean, if you buy bonds now, are you telling me that the bond yield is going to, is going to go lower because the bond prices are going to go up? I mean, how did that happen? And remember, if you buy a bond at this point and the rates go up, you earn more in interest rates, but your principal is worth less. So, we've had about $1.2 trillion worth of investor money has flowed into bond funds over the last 5 years. So it's still continuing, but we saw the first quarter of this year was the first quarter in several years where we've seen an actual decline in the Lehman Brothers aggregate bond index, which has been the benchmark for quite some time.
Do you think a lot of the managers are making those adjustments now? Do you see, you pointed a couple out in your article, but do you think the industry itself is making those adjustments so there's less risk for people in bond funds?
I think the good active managers are doing that. I mean, I think obviously there are some bond funds that are longer-term bond funds and treasury bond funds, and that's their mandate, and that's what they buy. In that case, it's really up to the individual to make the decision. I can tell you that I've been writing about this literally for years, and I was early, but I don't own any treasuries now, any long-term treasuries. I own some intermediate and short-term bonds, and I think my average maturity is about 3 to 5 years. And I'll give up the little yield in order to know that when the correction comes, I won't be hit so hard.
Now, one of the teams was apparently buying government bonds from other countries like Canada, yes. Australia, New Zealand, Norway.
Yes.
That sounds like a good idea to me because those are all high-quality instruments. And,
they are.
And some of those countries are doing much, much better than most of the countries on the planet. Do you agree with that move, and do you think it's a good
idea for investors? I think
it
makes
sense
to me. These are people. I think that was the co-manager of the Loomis Sales Bond Fund had done that, and they have a superb long-term track record. And he owned a lot of Canadian government bonds. And America, I mean, I've had Canadian advisors tell me that Americans could buy these things, and it might be one alternative. I mean, Canada's having some problems, but I think if you get a diversified basket of non-euro, non-dollar, non-yen denominated bonds, you get yourself a little currency hedge as well, which isn't bad in the world today. I think of a small portion of your portfolio, I think it makes sense.
Yeah, well, I agree, and I just hope that people realize just how much risk there are in bonds. A lot of people, I just don't think they do. And you made a comment in your article that the very bad news for people who load up on bonds is realizing that they are doing so without realizing they can actually lose money when interest rates rise. So, folks,
that's right,
out there, just be aware of that when interest rates do go up, you can lose money in bonds, and your losses in bonds could equal that in stocks. Bonds can be just as risky as stocks can be. And speaking of stocks, let's kind of shift over to that, Howard, because you wrote this great article entitled "Don't Jump Back in the Stocks Unless You Plan to Stay." One of my concerns as I speak to folks every day is that so many people seem to be late to the party, that they got out in 2008, 2009, They couldn't convince themselves to go back in 2009, and then they thought for sure in 2010 that it would go revert back to what it did in 2009, and so they didn't get in 2010. In 2011, they thought that it was over with. 2012, they were absolutely convinced. Now they're convinced the other way, and they feel like they're missing out, and so
right.
They're coming in. And you talked about a couple of folks that you talked to there. We had one in the local paper this weekend that were two physicians, literally that husband and wife team, that were just anxious to be getting in the markets right now. What is your advice to investors, and what are your thoughts on what investors are doing now in the marketplace?
Well, if we were on television, you could see me shaking my head right now, because I find the whole thing, it's a classic example of why market timing is really not a workable strategy for individual investors, and how investor psychology drives so much. I mean, now people, there's this thing called regret. It's a very important place in the market emotions, and now people are feeling regret that they weren't in the market. I think basically for me, it shows you should always be in the market. But you don't have to have a huge holding in the market. I mean, I think you can be, if you're a risk-averse investor, you can hold much less than people recommend. I think 60% is far too much for most people. And I saw a survey came out from Fidelity today that they're holding an average of like 36%. I think, 40 to 50% for people who are, 5 to 10 years from retirement, and maybe around 50% for people a little more, I think that's quite sufficient to people to benefit from the market's moves without being hurt too much by the downturn. Because when you get hit in something like 2008, you say, I've had enough, get me out, and you get out at just the wrong time, and then you get back in 4 years and 120% rally later. I mean, it doesn't make sense. So that's why I say keep less in. Don't worry so much. You won't lose so much, and you'll stay in the game at least. For most people, I think that is a reasonable solution.
And I take it you probably have lightened up a little bit yourself, correct?
Well, I have. I've actually taken, I've basically sold a lot of, I've moved most of my bond holdings to short and intermediate term. I've reduced my holdings in TIPS and high yield bonds. I wrote a column several months ago calling TIPS, high yields, and treasuries the three most overvalued areas in the market. So since that column appeared, I don't really act before I write something, but afterwards I gradually sold some off. And so,
Howard, if you'll hang on with that, I'd like to come back and talk about Marty Zweig for a minute. We'll be back in just a few moments, folks. Stay with us.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We have had a great show today, and it's all because of my guest, Mr. Howard Gold, editor-at-large of themoneyshow.com and a columnist for MarketWatch. You can follow Howard at theindependentagenda.com. That's his website and his blog. So go to theindependentagenda.com. And just before we got off, Howard and I have a mutual friend. It's somebody that had a big impact on my life. In fact, years ago, I was on a panel with Marty Zweig, and I had given a speech, and he took me aside. He said, "You know, you're a bright young man. What you need to do is go out and get out of the investment business and start writing a newsletter. You'll make a lot more money." Sometimes I wish I'd taken his advice, but I know, Howard, that you were a good friend of Marty Zweig. You recently reread his book. You know, I'm going to find it. You inspired me to do that because I have a signed copy of Marty's book, Winning on Wall Street, that he wrote many years ago. And he's famous in my mind for two statements. And one is, don't fight the Fed, don't fight the tape, in which you talk about that. Give me your thoughts on Marty Zweig, and let's talk a little bit about those two admonishments that Marty gave us in that book.
Yes. I mean, I interviewed Marty once as a reporter at a small business paper in Miami years ago. I think that's one of the few advantages of getting older is that you actually can look back on your life and think about all the people who affected you. He was extremely gracious and very nice and very smart. And I read his book back then, and it always made a big impression on me with the kind of simplicity of his ideas, but they're very powerful ideas. And the two ideas he's known for are don't fight the Fed and don't fight the tape. Now, these are almost cliches now, but if you really pay attention, you could really make money on them. He said, and I'm quoting, he said, the monetary climate, meaning interest rates, is the dominant factor in determining the stock market's major direction. And so if you go against that, I mean, even if you believe that this is artificial, which a lot of people do these days with good reason about the Federal Reserve's pumping money, the market will continue to rise. I mean, he was a student of the market and kept tracked this a lot. So whether you like what they're doing or not, you know, fighting the Fed under these circumstances over the long term probably doesn't make sense. Now, the other thing he said is don't fight the tape, meaning don't fight the major direction of the market. He says, get in harmony with the market. Listen to this. It's suicidal to fight trends. Fighting the tape is an open invitation to disaster. So, you know, when the market's going up and you're shorting or you're buying put options like a lot of the hedge funds have been doing for the last year, you're going to underperform. So I think these kind of things are, I mean, you know, they're not the only elements of investing, but they're certainly things you have to pay a lot of attention to, which is one of the reasons that I'm not really bearish, that I'm, you know, I think we're coming toward we're in the latter innings of this bull market. But as long as I see the market going up and as long as the Fed has a loose policy, I just don't see a major bear market on the horizon.
Yep, and I can't tell you how many times I've said don't fight the Fed because, you know, you can look at the demographic story of what should be happening right now with the baby boomers retiring and not spending as much. But the fact of the matter is that the Federal Reserve is having a huge impact on this economy, on these markets, and Marty was absolutely correct. Now, in his research, he found that every bear market from 1919 to 1982 had at least one of three conditions in your article: extreme deflation, ultra-high P.E. ratios in the upper teens and 20s, or an inverted yield curve where the short-term interest rates exceed the long-term rates. You and I were talking during the break about some of my guests. I've had a few guests on that say that we've got deflation, and you say no, that we really don't have a deflationary economy.
We don't have a deflationary economy precisely because the Federal Reserve and other central banks have added $7 trillion to global balance sheets since 2008. And that has been the difference. I mean, without that, we probably would have deflation and we might have a depression. We have depressions in a couple of countries, but not, you know, I mean, that's obviously controversial. I mean, you know, David Stockman just wrote a book and he's been all over the airways criticizing that. But I really feel that we were on the precipice.
Yeah, we're going to try to get Stockman on and see if he can explain that to us. Now,
he's a very smart man. His book looks very interesting, by the way.
Yeah, I haven't read the book yet, but he is a very, very smart man. But now you were talking also about Dr. Barisi. We've had Peter Barisi on before.
Yes.
Who says that we should come up with a new CPI for retirees.
Yeah, well, actually, he was making an interesting point. What he was opposing was some of the ideas being put around to sort of chain CPI or something. It's a very technical. I'm not sure I quite understand it. But what it would do would be to reduce the adjustment for inflation of people getting Social Security and other benefits. And what he pointed out actually is that people on fixed incomes and retirees actually face the higher inflation. I mean, all the things like food, energy costs, et cetera, hurt fixed income people much more. Whereas the things that factor in with other people, like the cost of, you know, the declining cost of iPhone or iPad or computers or rent, you know, rent and housing, really primarily benefit younger people who are starting out and building families and things like that. So it was an interesting idea. I mean, I haven't really explored it that much, but I think he makes a point that different people feel inflation in different ways.
Yeah, we're gonna try to get him on too. I appreciate that heads up. Any last words? Any last pieces of advice that you have for those investors that are just getting in the market, contemplating getting in the market? You know, we're getting near the sell away in May, go away in May scenario. Would you caution people about getting in right now? Any final words of advice?
I think the best advice I give is be patient and wait for your opportunities. Don't feel you have to jump in right away. The market goes up and the market goes down. Mostly it goes up over the long run. So if you keep a smaller position in the market, then you don't have to worry about, you know, all these feelings of regret and anxiety. You'll just be making money. And, you know, I mean, for most people, dollar cost averaging is the way to go. Just, you know, just put a little bit in, put $100 in a month, whatever you can put in. You know, I mean, and get a very broadly diversified fund. Don't try to be a smart guy or gal and pick winning stocks. Just get a broadly diversified portfolio.
I agree. You know, Marty Zweig would have been proud of you, Howard. He would have.
Thank you.
He would have.
We lost him way too young.
That's right. He was a great man. Listen, thank you so much, Howard, for being with us. Folks, you really want to check up Howard on the independentagenda.com. Follow Howard Gold. As you can tell, he himself is a very bright man, and we're glad he's still with us. Thank you, Howard, for being with us today.
Take care.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. You know what, folks, one of the things that Marty Zweig believed in was that the flexibility was really important, that it was an important trait for individual investors. It was your ability to change with fluid markets. You know, things change all the time. You know, right now we have a high-flying market. Things are going well. At some point out there, the direction of those markets is going to change. Whether or not it's going to be a 5% pullback or something more significant, things will change. And it's not so important that you know where markets are going. I think that's helpful. We work really hard here at my firm to try to figure out where things are going, where the puck is going to be, as Wayne Gretzky would say. But it's really, really important that you change with the markets, that you don't set your portfolio and your feet in concrete. So what I want you to do is I want you to go back, as I tell you all the time, go back and take a look at those portfolios, take a look at where your investments are, and make sure that you can adjust to the markets as they change. Because you can, if there's one thing that I can guarantee you will happen in the stock market, is it will not be the same each and every day, and that things will change. I thought Howard Gold was great. Peggy, did you like him?
I always enjoy Howard. Yeah. He's just so accommodating and makes my job easy.
Yeah, I thought he was really, really great. And we've got tomorrow, I think we're going to have Jim Rogers. And then on Friday, I'll be broadcasting from Ed Slott's office in Long Island, New Jersey, Long Island, New York, as I go to see the folks up there. So thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for allowing us to come in your homes, your cars, your radios, your computers. We hope you have a great day. Hope God blesses you and your family. Have a wonderful day. Make a little money today, folks. God bless. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.